Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, Pastor Chris brings us a message on the parable of the grower as we consider what it means to wait on God's timing. As always, for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, stick around after the message. And now, let's head over to Pastor Chris.
Not had the opportunity to meet. My name is Chris. I'm the youth pastor here, so obviously I'm preaching on Labor Day, which makes sense. It's a running joke in all of the youth ministry groups. It's 99% of the time true. So it's great. Hence why I am up here. This morning, I am really excited to talk about a couple of things. One, is a little plastic white cup. How many of you were ever handed a cup like this in school before? If you were an athlete like me, it was for different reasons than what we're going to talk about this morning. But in elementary school, you may remember getting a cup like this to do a little bit of a science experiment where you would put some dirt in it, so you would have a cup of dirt, and then you would put a seed inside of that cup of dirt, and then you would water it, and you'd set it on the windowsill in your classroom. And you kind of had this weird race between you and everyone else in the class that you had no control over to see, like, whose seed sprouted first, right? It was this weird race that we all did, and you were just pumped for that day, where day one, you would do all of that, and you'd set it, and you're like, okay, nothing's obviously going to happen day one, so that's fine. But day two, you come in, and you're telling your parents about it at home, and you come back the next day expecting that there's going to be, like, this seedling or plant or full bush, whatever it was that you were expecting, and there's still nothing. It's still just a cup with dirt in it, right? It's not anything. And then you come back day three, and it's still just a cup with dirt in it, and it's not until like a week later or a week and a half where finally there's this little sprout that starts to pop up. And what looked like starting like nothing, eventually, something started happening. You ask this question, is anything going to happen? And then all of a sudden, something was happening. There was life coming up from this cup of dirt. The sprout started sprouting. And the crazy part about all of that is that when we thought nothing was happening in this cup, there was actually a lot happening in this cup. We just didn't fully know and couldn't fully see it. So if you're taking notes this morning, here's our big idea for the day, is that God often does hidden work in our lives, that God grows what we cannot, and that we only need to practice patience. And this idea is not comfortable for many of us. I think we like to think it's comfortable, but the way that our lives practically work out is that we want to see those progress bars, right? How many of you ever sent a text message before? You see the little blue or the little green bar across the top, and it gets to like 98% and then stops. And you're like, what was that whole 98% before it? Was that just like leading me on to think that the progress was getting done, right? Now I'm stuck here. Waiting. We like to see progress on things. We like progress bars. If we're numbers peoples, we like tracking numbers, right? We like to see our bank account go up and not down, right? We like to track numbers. We like instant notifications, right? We like things to happen fast. And if we're honest, we like to control the growth of the things that happen in our lives. We don't like this idea of waiting, right? It's like when we had these little cups in our class and ours wasn't sprouting, we'd go and like move the dirt around, right? To see if things were happening. And what was actually happening is we were probably actually hurting the growth of the seed in our cup rather than just letting it do its own thing the way that it was supposed to be done. And if we would have actually just slowed down, things would have gone the way they were supposed to. Obviously, we're not just going to preach about a cup with dirt this morning and a seed. But this idea of waiting is this invitation that Jesus has to us into a different rhythm, one of faithful action, one of everyday trust, and one of really trusting God's timing for our life. Jesus says it like this in Mark chapter 4, verses 26 through 29. He also said, "This is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground. Night and day, whether he sleeps or whether he gets up, the seed sprouts and grows, though he does not know how. All by itself, the soil produces grain, first with the stalk, then with the head, and then the full kernel within the head. And as soon as the grain is ripe, he puts the sickle to it, because the harvest has come. This morning, I know we are in a family service. We are going to do our best to keep kids engaged, right? So I want to give you the roadmap for the things we're going to talk about this morning. So we're going to talk first with the kids. We're going to have a kids and cups moment, okay? We're going to have some historical farming facts, which everyone is just jacked about. We're going to talk about Greek words. We're going to talk about divine timing, and we're going to have a hands-on challenge, which all of those sound like they could be Jeopardy categories if we're honest with ourselves. So we're going to start with kids and cups for 1,000. Ken Jipping. Is it Ken Jipping? Ken Jennings. That's what his name is. Before we do that, who needs to hear this story today? If you are someone who is in a season of waiting, if you are someone who's praying for a child, fighting for a marriage, rebuilding a habit, battling addiction, or waiting on joyful things that are to come, the expectation of a child or a grandchild or whatever it may be, here's a little snippet of what this story will teach all of us, kids and adults alike. So just because you can't see the growth that's happening doesn't mean that God isn't growing. To say it a little bit differently, God is working while you are waiting. And so let's begin where Jesus begins, with a seed and a little dirt. And in a moment, I'm going to invite the kids up, but I need two volunteers to help with our kids, adults, to help with our kids moment. Andrew, I was going to point you out anyways because you're right here in the beginning. This is great. I was sitting over here. I was like, I'm going to ask Andrew and Jess if nobody else does, because Jess is an elementary school teacher, and Andrew works in the public schools and is awesome. So I've got a cup or a cart with a ton of cups and dirt because I have no idea how many kids were here this morning. So I need one of you. Jess, you want to come up? You can be the dirt cup giver. That's what you put it on your resume. Andrew, you can be the seed giver.
Whoa.
I know. That's a big response. Actually, you're the biggest responsibility out of all of them, okay? So here's what we want to do. I want to invite all of our kids up, but I need you to make a line here. First, you're going to get a cup for Miss Jess, so you guys can start moving this way now, all like however many of you there are. So come, you'll get a cup from Miss Jess, and then you will get a seed from Mr. Andrew, and you can put it in your cup and push it down in there a little ways, okay? That'll be great. And then I need you to sit right down here in the front, okay? Because you're going to hang out with me for a minute. We're going to have a kids' moment. It's going to be very awesome and chaotic. It's going to be great. I told you we're going to keep the kids engaged. Because if your kids are anything like mine, I'm worried about them making too much noise during service and disrupting everybody. So,
I would do that.
Yeah. You probably would, because that's probably what I did as a kid. This is where I feel like we actually need the Jeopardy music in the background. Do we have Spotify? Can we turn that on? No, I'm just kidding. We don't have to do that, Amy. That's fine. My hope, kids, is that with this cup and this dirt, you can take it home, and I'll talk about this a little bit, is that you can take this home, and this can be a reminder for you for what we're going to talk about this morning. All right? This is like communion. This is going to take 8 hours. This is great.
We should have had multiple lines.
Yeah, we should have had multiple lines. That's fine. That's all right. It's all right. Andrew and Jess are rock stars at this. You guys are so kind to these kids. It's great. You guys sat in the right spots today. All right, I'm going to have all of you kind of sit on the floor because I need to sit on the stage right here. Is that okay? Can I have you sit down? Because you guys need to look at me. You need to turn around and look at me, okay? So we can talk for a minute, okay? Here, back up just a little bit. I'm going to squat down here. All right, here we go. I'm sure I'm making all of the camera for live stream people really enjoying this right now. All right, so I'm going to get started as the kids are kind of making their way down here. I think we might have a little bit more room on the sides and stuff. Okay, quick question for all of you kids. As you got the cup and the seed, which one was bigger, the cup or the seed?
The cup.
Right, the cup was bigger. But do you think the seed was bigger just because everybody else had the cup? Yeah, that's probably true. Okay, but which one has the life inside of it?
Seed.
It's a trick question. The seed is inside the cup, so the cup technically has the life inside of it. I'm just kidding. The seed is the one. You're right. You're correct. Right. So when I was in elementary school, I remember being given a cup like this. Maybe many of you were given a cup like this, or you grew like beans or peas or something like that in your school. I remember in third grade in Mrs. Rich's class, we had this. And I remember being taught like the life cycles of a plant. Don't ask me to name the stages of those because I don't remember. But it was this really cool moment. I'm wondering, like in this moment, I had to wait a really long time for the seed to sprout. Have any of you ever like planted seeds before and waited for them to sprout? It takes a while, doesn't it? It's kind of annoying how long it takes. Have you ever had to wait for anything in life before? Yeah, it seemed like it had to wait like a really long time. My son just turned 4. I don't know if he's up here or not. I don't see him. He might be. He's in the back there. But he had to wait for his 4th birthday recently. And that was a really long time for him to have to wait. Because let's be honest, waiting is hard sometimes, right? Have you ever known Christmas was coming and you had to wait to open all of your presents? Or, you know, school was coming back and you had to wait? Well, that might not be so hard to wait for. You know, it's fine. You could enjoy summer a little bit longer, right? But getting back to see all of your friends, like that might be fun. You might have a soccer game on Saturday that you're looking forward to. It might be really hard to wait for something. And sometimes in life, we have hard things that happen, things that are hard. And there's a story that I found in the book of Mark that we read this morning. Have any of you ever heard of the book of Mark before? You ever heard that name before? Okay, a couple of you. Who do you think wrote the book of Mark? That's right. Yeah. Mark himself wrote it. You're right. Who do you think he wrote it for? Any idea? Himself. Did he write it for himself? Maybe, possibly. Mark wrote the book of Mark for a group of Christians, like many of us, who lived in a city of Rome. Has anybody ever heard of the city of Rome before? Ever heard that name? It's a really big city back in the day, part of the Roman Empire. And these people had a really hard life because they were scared of what could happen to them because they were following Jesus, right? We don't have to really worry about being scared of following Jesus, but these people had to worry about sometimes being put in prison or sometimes being hurt by other people because they followed Jesus. And the book of Mark is like, have any of you ever seen like an action movie trailer before, like a movie trailer that's like really fun and it shows you all like the really awesome parts of the movie? The book of Mark is kind of like a movie trailer for Jesus' life. It shows all of the incredible moments in his life because he wanted the people in Rome to know that Jesus was worth following. And so the story we looked at this morning was called the story of the seed in Mark chapter 4, verses 29 through 20 or 26 through 29. And here's the main point of the story. You ready? Jesus said that God's kingdom is like a person who plants a seed. And then they go about doing normal life. They sleep. How many of you sleep? Yeah, for the most part. Some of you more than others. You wake up. How many of you woke up this morning? Yep, good. You're all here. Some of you go to school. How many of you go to school? Yeah, tomorrow. Yep. Or, well, not tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day off. Don't go to school tomorrow. Be the only one. How many of you eat snacks? Yeah? All right, on the count of three, I want you to say your favorite snack, okay? 1, 2, 3. Yep, all of those. Those are great. So he says he does all of these things. The farmer does all of these things. He sleeps. He wakes up. He goes to school. He probably didn't eat Oreos, but he ate snacks. While something was happening under the ground, right, the seed in the dirt, the seed started to grow, even though he couldn't see it. And so I want you to repeat something after me. Can you do that with me? Can you help me finish a sentence? I want you to do a little call and response for me. I'm going to say, when we can't see it, God is, and I want you to say the word, working. Okay, can you do that with me? Okay, so when we can't see it, God is?
Working.
Yeah, all right, one more time. Say it a little bit louder, because I don't think the adults in the balcony could hear it, okay? When we can't see it, God is?
Working!
There you go, excellent. When you came up here, you just did your part of that working aspect, right? You planted the seed, and now it's up to its normal duties to grow the seed, okay? Last thing that I want to say. So here's a simple challenge for you guys this week. Every time you see a plant this week, whether it be a dandelion, a tree, or a houseplant, or you see this cup, right? I want you to whisper or say in your head a prayer of, God, thank you that you're working while I'm waiting, okay? God, thank you that you're working while I'm waiting. And maybe your parents can help you remember that. Or you can say something I got lost in my notes. There we go. God, thank you that you're working while I'm waiting, okay? Let me say a quick prayer for you, and you guys can go back to your seats, okay? All right. Jesus, thank you for these seeds. Thank you for the ways that you work in our lives without us knowing it. Thank you for doing your work in our hearts, even when we can't see it. Help us to plant and trust and wait. Grow your love in us. Amen. All right, you guys can take your cup of dirt back to your seat, okay? Those are maple tree seeds, so they'll grow into maple trees someday.
Wait, a big one? A big
one? I don't know, maybe, if you keep it alive. If you kill it, it's not going to grow at all. Remember, don't overwork it. You will kill it. I harvested those off of my back patio yesterday as the squirrels were knocking them out of the tree. There were two of them combined, and the squirrels only ate one side of them, so they made my work easy. It was awesome. It's great. All right, as they're making their way back to the seats, that was either a really great idea or a terrible idea, because I may have made our custodian really mad with dirt all over the church. It'll be fine. We'll find out tomorrow. No, we'll find out on Tuesday. That'll be great. So a little historical context for you. Some farming facts. If you want to feel this parable, which I hope all of you do this morning, don't picture a backyard garden like you see on all of the YouTube shorts or Instagram reels with the drip lines and the cattle fencing archways and all of those sorts of things. Don't picture a backyard garden with all of its YouTube hacks. I want you to step into Galilee. In the first century, there's hills, there's stone terraces, there's thin soil, there's no tractor, there's no fertilizer spreader. There's no weather app to tell us whether it's going to rain or whether we have to use our water and pay for it to water our gardens. There's just calloused hands, a seed bag over someone's shoulder, a prayer, and whatever the sky decides to do. The farms weren't the mega Monsanto-style farms, tens of thousands of acres. Historians believe that most farms in the ancient world were about 5 to 10 acres, just enough for somebody to manage and to live off of and provide food for themselves throughout the years. The tools were extremely simple. There was a wooden plow with maybe a metal blade. There was maybe an ox if you could afford one, but mostly it was the sweat and labor of your own back that was able to plow the field that you had. And farmers didn't plow up perfect rows in this region. They broadcast the seed. They tilled up all the land and then broadcast the seed out. They threw it as far as they could, kind of in even patterns, long practiced arc from the bag on their shoulders. And some of these, like we read in the parables before, they would fall on the footpaths, right? Some of them would fall into rocky pockets. Some of them would fall where thorns were destined to overtake them. And if God was kind, some of those seeds would fall into the good soil. Sometimes you would scratch the ground first, or sometimes you would kind of go over and stomp them in or kick the dirt over that was kind of loose to give them a little bit of protection from the birds. It wasn't a precise job like you have the seed mowers of today where they plant everything and, you know, 6-inch marks or whatever. You just kind of did what you could do because it was the most efficient way to do it, and it was highly personal. For each of the farmers, you learned patience because you had no choice. If you dig up the seed every night to check on it, you don't help it, you kill it. If you were to get water from your cistern to bring it out to the field and try and water 5 to 10 acres with buckets, it would not be worth it, and you'd make a ton of people mad in your city from taking your city's water supply that was dependent on the rain. And when did they sow? It was after the first autumn rain. Seasons were kind of backwards from what we have here. After it had softened the earth, you would till it as much as you could, and then you would throw the seed, and then you'd go about your normal daily life. You would sleep, and you would rise. There would be night, and there would be day. You would wake up every day, and you would scan the horizon for clouds and say, maybe it's going to rain
today. They knew the pattern of sowing and rain and sprout and harvest, but they didn't always know the process. They couldn't exactly explain the roots splitting the seed coat or how the microbes worked in the soil or whether you had too much calcium or not enough nitrogen or too much carbon. Like, they didn't know all of this stuff from at a microbiology level about their soil. They would simply wake up and pray that winter wasn't stingy to them. And eventually, it would show up. There would be the first signs of life. Then they would watch it grow, and then there would be the harvest. They would pull out their sickle, which wasn't just decor like we often use in our houses now, right? It was used at that precise decision time. When the grain was ripe, they moved. They didn't have a choice. And you couldn't do it early, or you would lose too much of your yield, and you would be out food for the year. You couldn't wait too long, because then you were subjecting your wheat to either falling over from the wind and becoming too heavy, or too much rain and having mildew on it, or we don't have to worry about this in our gardens in the backyard unless you have deer, but thieves would come by, right, and steal the harvest from the land because it was easier for some people than planting their own. This was a whole village affair. You would see this throughout the village. People going out into their fields, inviting neighbors. There were songs, and there was sweat, and there was joy, and there was provision. And what we often don't think about is that there was a heavy tax on all of these, whether you grew enough or not. You see, for these individuals, seed equaled money. Seed was also next year's food for your family. Under Roman taxes and rents, it was said that it was 10% of all grain that was grown. Depending on how big your field was, you owed 10% of what you could possibly grow to Rome every year. And if you were in the fruit and oil business, you had to give 1/5 of whatever you were supposed to yield that year to Rome, regardless of if it grew or not. There was no crop insurance like we have today. There was none of that. There wasn't watering systems and drip hoses and timers. This wasn't a hobby for them. This was survival. And so when Jesus talks about sowing and waiting, he's not telling a cute garden story like we often see online. He is speaking to a people at high risk of possibly not making ends meet. He is talking to people that have anxiety regularly through the season, wondering if it's going to rain enough or not. He's talking to people about their calendars, about their cash flow, and about their next meal and whether it is going to happen or not. Now, why all of that background? Because when we open Mark chapter 4, Jesus is not just tossing around random metaphors to a group of people that no one would understand. He is speaking their daily language. He's speaking about human responsibility. You scatter what you've been given. He's talking about ordinary rhythms, their sleep and their rise and their seasons, and while God works under the surface. He's talking about sacred mystery, about how it grows and they don't quite know how. And he's talking about holy timing. When it's ripe, they would go to harvest. And so with that in our brains, I want us to hear this passage like a Galilean farmer would. And we're going to take it verse by verse, all four of the verses. We're going to talk about scattering, sleeping and rising, stages of growth and harvest. Verse 26 says, "He also said, 'This is what the kingdom of God is like. A man scatters seed on the ground.'" Mark keeps us on the lakeshore. All of these parables to this point have been on this lakeshore of the Sea of Galilee. We're in the same boat, the same crowd, but from a fresh angle from the other stories that had been told. The story shortly before this one is a story of the sower. We kind of alluded to it earlier. The story where the sower goes out and he throws seed and some falls on the rocky ground, some falls on the dry ground and is scorched by the sun, some grows among the thorns or is eaten by the birds, and others fall on the good soil. Shortly after this, there's the story of the mustard seed, how this tiny little seed, you may have heard this before, grows into this beautiful, huge bush, right? And then there's this like weird random story about a lamp that doesn't fit in the rest of Mark chapter 4, which I don't understand why Jesus did that, but I'm not him, so he's got that under control. But this brief story, which is often called the growing seed, appears only in the book of Mark, which should heighten our attention to it. The kingdom of God here means that God's reign is breaking in through Jesus, his active rule and saving work. It's not a place to go necessarily, but it's God acting in real time through Jesus and the people that are with him. He says, amen. He doesn't give this person a name, and theologians will say that he did this because he wanted it to be a simple, ordinary person, that there were no titles, there were no heroics to this person, so everyone could see themselves in that picture of the farmer, that they went out and they scattered seeds, which reflects the normal farming practice of the first century Galilee, a farmer walking out with a sling bag with seed and throwing soil across the ground. And the seed echoes Mark 4's earlier teaching, where the seed represents the gospel news, the message of the kingdom coming to earth. But in this parable, the emphasis shifts from defining what the seed is to tracing what happens to the seed once it's in the soil. The on-the-ground part roots the image in creation's everyday process, the dirt that can receive, conceal, and nurture life out of sight. This cadence is intentionally done the way that it is. Jesus wanted the ordinary person to connect with the ordinary person who performs an ordinary act in an ordinary field from this story. There's nothing spectacular yet that's happening because the force of the story won't rest on the technique or the intensity at which the farmer sows. There's a reason why Jesus doesn't say how the farmer can work the land and do all of the various other things, because that's not the point of this story. What the point is what the seed does under the surface and how God brings it to completion. In verse 27, it says, night and day, whether he sleeps or he gets up, the seed sprouts and it grows, though he does not know how. Mark kind of moves the camera from the farmer down to under the surface, to the farmer's rhythm a little bit. He sleeps and he gets up. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked the kids. How many of you slept last night? For those of you that didn't, I really apologize. I hope you get sleep tonight. How many of you woke up? Again, all of you, because you made it here. Unless you didn't go to sleep, then you didn't wake up. You just have been awake. How many of you are sleeping now? Is it a dangerous question to ask? I got one hand back there. Sweet. Love it. All right. Sweet. You shouldn't be. You should wake up. This is the drumbeat of normal life. The days stack on top of each other, right? How many of you feel that? Days kind of stack on top of each other. Seasons turn over. It felt like it was just spring not too long ago, and here we are in pseudo fall, right? Months turned into years, all of these things. There's nothing flashy on the surface happening about this individual's patterns. In Galilee, that rhythm meant months of cloud watching and waiting for the winter rains. Fields could look exactly the same for a really long time, and ordinary life is just kind of happening and passing by. But then the subject shifts, not to the man, but to the seed, and it says it sprouts and grows. The focus slides under the surface, out of sight. The soil receives and shelters the seed. The moisture starts to break apart the coat of the seed, and the sprout starts to happen. Then says that the seed sprouts and grows, and a hidden push begins downward while the shoot comes up out of the ground. The verse makes this moment the point, that real change is happening where the eye can't see, right? It's more than just a farming analogy. Some of you might want to write that down, that real change is happening where the eye can't see. And the farmer doesn't know how. And that's the humility line of the entire thing, right? Ancient farmers knew patterns. They knew sowing, raining, sprouting, and harvesting, but they didn't know all of the mechanisms. They could observe timing, but not necessarily explain the causation. And Mark leaves that gap on purpose. The parable refuses to credit the technique of the farmer when they could have said a whole bunch of things about it, or the intensity of the outcome. Because growth, what Mark wants us to believe is that growth belongs to a power beyond the sower's control, working through the ordinary processes that God built into creation. And I want to pause here because remember, Jesus is using a farming analogy But as Jesus often does in parables, he's not just talking about farming, right? Because how often is that true in our lives, that something was happening behind the scenes and we didn't even know it yet? Maybe you didn't get the job that you wanted, right? This was my story in 2018, coming out of seminary, wondering where I was going to do or what I was going to do for work, and applied for different pastor positions and got turned down by like five of them that I could or could not name as their actual name that I don't hold grudges against. It's totally fine. It's like Draymond Green or whatever. He could name all like 36 people that were drafted ahead of him. That's insane. But maybe you're like me. You didn't get the job you wanted, and it stung, right? You're like, oh, this feels like a really personal rejection of me as a person. Not that maybe I just wasn't the right fit for the job, and it stung, but the delay maybe made room to heal a little bit, to work on some things, to work up some new skills. And in my case, or maybe your case, you met a mentor or a colleague who helped open a door later. And God was working even when I or we couldn't see it. Maybe you had a friendship that kind of cooled over time, that was like your best friend for a while, right? And you felt the ache of that. And months later, you realize that that distance protected you from some choices that could have been detrimental to your life or the course of your life that it would have taken. And you didn't know it yet, but God was working even though you couldn't see it. The medical test came back inconclusive, which leads to more waiting in a season where there was already a lot of waiting, right, and frustration. But in that gap, your group or your small group or your friend group or family group rallied around you in really beautiful ways. Schedules seemed to align in ways that you couldn't make up, and the right specialist happened to have a spot at just the right time to get you in, and God was working even though we couldn't see it. You maybe lost out in this housing market that has been the past couple of years on a house that you thought was perfect because somebody outbid you. And yet later, you found a place with more manageable payments, closer to work or closer to schools or closer to churches that you go to, wherever it is. And now you're surrounded by neighbors who became family. This is our story. My kids love the fact that our backyard bumps up to Mr. John and Miss Timmy's backyard. They are in their 70s, and when their slider is open, Miss Timmy gave my kids permission. Whenever you see my slider open, yell for me because I'll come out and hang out with you. And they take her up on it, probably more than we should allow them to, but they take her up on it, right? They've kind of become our neighborhood grandparents to our kids, and it's a really beautiful thing because if we would have gotten a house 2 years ago that we wanted, we wouldn't have had that opportunity potentially for our kids, right? And so God was working even when we couldn't see it. Or maybe you've had this before, travel plans fall apart, or you get seats rearranged on a plane, which can kind of be annoying and throw things off, but in that new seat or that new route, you meet someone in crisis who needed your exact story and your exact prayer in that moment. And when God was working even when we couldn't see it. Pastor John Piper says it this way. In 2012, he had a tweet that kind of went viral. If Twitter is even still a thing, I don't know. Maybe it's just Elon Musk that uses it now. But God is always doing 10,000 things in your life, and you maybe are aware of three of them, right? How often does that feel true for our lives, where things happen that we couldn't explain, but God was at work? And so verse 27 completely shifts from where verse 26 began, from human participation to the divine process of things, from what hands can do to what only God can bring about. The farmer goes about keeping the daily rhythms and the patience that's required in them, and the seed carries out the hidden life, and the outcome arrives by a wisdom that the sower can't map out. And that tension, the ordinary days above ground, the holy mystery below, is the heartbeat of this story and our story. Verse 28 continues on. All by itself, the soil produces grain. First the stalk, then the head, then the full kernel in the head. Now the emphasis rests on what happens after the seed disappears into the soil, right? The earth produces it by itself. There's a Greek word that's used here that's only used one other place in the New Testament. It's called automate. Can you say that? Automate? Yeah, Can you give me an idea of what you think it means? Automatic, right? See, Greek's not that hard. You don't have to pay to go to seminary for it, right? Who needs that? Automatically doesn't mean, though, without God in this situation, right? It means through the ordinary God-designed processes in this story that are baked into creation, this seed will become a sprout. The soil is not the hero, it's the instrument. The point is the point and agency has shifted. The farmer's hand is off, and God's hand is at work. Jesus slows the camera down, and he says, first, the stalk is the thing that comes up, right? It's that moment when we have that cup of dirt where we see that stalk come up. We're like, oh, it's exciting, we can see it, right? But it's not, we still can't mess with it, right? Like, it's coming to life, but if we mess with it too much, it might die, right? We might not even recognize in our lives the sprouts that are starting, but we know that something is happening that hasn't happened before, right? It's this exciting moment, that first thin cut of green through the brown ground. It's real, but it's fragile. And then there's the head where the structure forms. The head is there, its promise is taking shape. And then the full kernel with inside the head, the weight and substance appear and begin to fill in the form. The cadence is intentional. It's a sequence, and there's no shortcuts to it, right? The theology riding on this is simple and strong, and it's throughout the scriptures, is that the kingdom's advance is, one, real; two, that it's ordered; and three, that there's a gradual stage giving way to the next. Now, there are exceptions to that rule you can find throughout scripture, but oftentimes this is the way things work. That technique can't manufacture it, and hurry can't force it. But that the narrative of our lives and the narrative Jesus wants us to see is that our lives are always moving towards the harvest. And Jesus insists that there are phases in order to get there. Verse 29, as soon as the grain is ripe, he puts the sickle to it because the harvest has come. The narrative shifts back to the underground mystery to a moment above, or shifts from the underground mystery to a moment above ground that every farmer knows and waits for. When the grain is ripe, names that the condition that the sower does not control and cannot rush has finally happened. Ripeness is the gift of the patient season of waiting. The kernels are firm, the heads are heavy, and the color has turned, and it's carried there by its own authority. We as farmers and individuals, we often don't get to declare a field ripe. The field kind of does that for us, right? And at once, he goes out and puts the sickle to it. Human action comes back into the story again. This is like the favorite moment of all of the farmers. They get to go out and they have the party and there's singing and rejoicing and there's a whole village affair. Some people are bundling the grain up and bringing it to the threshing floor. Others are getting to beat the crap out of it, right, to get the seeds out of it, which maybe was a frustrating harvest season and you want to be in the threshing floor, right? These are why the anger rooms popped up throughout all of West Michigan for a while, right? Y'all had some anger issues for a while, kept those things alive for a long time. But there was a whole ordeal for the village because there was joy in the provision. It was strenuous work, but it was communal and it was also time sensitive because the harvest had come. Verse 29 completes the pattern of the whole parable. There's human participation to begin the story, the scattering of the seed. There's this long section, I mean, in four verses, as long as you can get, of this patient waiting in these seasons that are often hard, wondering, is God going to make it rain, or where is God at work in this season, the hidden growth, the divine process. And then it returns to the proper time as responsive obedience in the harvest for humans to act again. Technique never sits in the driver's seat in the story. Timing always does. And the kingdom's cadence is clear. We recognize ripeness, move without delay, and admit with humility that the season you're responding to arrived by a power that you did not supply. Now, what about us today? I want to tell you one more story. I have a picture of it on the screen. This is a picture from my neighbor's backyard. This is Mr. John and Miss Timmy's backyard. I snuck a picture of it while they weren't home. I think they won't mind. And if they're watching online, because I told them I was preaching, thanks for the picture of your tree. This tree right here, you can see the trunk of it. We have a maple tree that's kind of overtaking it. I feel bad about that now, but it's a really cool pine tree that one day, about 42 years ago, their son came home from elementary school. And he had planted in a cup with some dirt a pine seed. And his dad took it to their backyard and planted it in the back right corner of their yard. And 42 years later, you get a tree that's that big. Now, did he ever think that this tree was going to end up in a sermon to kind of complete it and bring it full circle? No. But this tree is a testament to waiting and patiently watering and watching it just kind of do its thing. And now, this tree, 42 years later, gives shade across their backyard for grandkids to come and play in. Nobody clapped when that seed went into the dirt. Nobody thought 42 years later this tree would still be here. Nobody posted about it. Nobody threw a party for it. It just kind of happened. And time did what God but time did what time does in God's hands. It made that tree grow. So here's the truth. You probably have no idea what God may grow from what looks like something small today. Where you might see dirt in your life, where it doesn't seem like there's a lot of things happening, God sees a ground that is ready for roots. You may see a cup that's empty and has nothing, but God sees the potential for a beautiful canopy to bring life and joy to so many other people. And so here's the challenge. It's simple, doable, and I think for some of you, it may be a holy moment that you need today. On your way out, I want to invite you to do the same thing that the kids did. You don't have to take me up on this, but it is up here. Sometimes gimmicky things are the best things to help us remember things. I once walked around with a domino in my pocket for like 3 months from a sermon. So gimmicky things can sometimes be the really powerful things we need. But I want to give you an opportunity. If you feel like you are in a season of waiting, or you feel like you look around and your life just kind of looks like an empty field, like could anything good come out of this? I want you to take me up on this moment to do something holy. On your way out, if there's something for you're praying for, that you're praying for, something you hope God is working on or in your life, whether that thing is hard or filled with joy, I want you to pick up a cup. And I don't know if there are seeds left over, but I snuck like 30 of them from the bag earlier, so we had some. But I have some more seeds here for you. I would love for you to take one and plant it. And when you get home, write one word on your cup. Not a paragraph, it doesn't have to be a long explanation, but maybe it's just one word about a situation that you're in. It could be a name, it could be a habit, it could be a hurt. Whatever rises to the surface when you ask, Lord, what do you want to grow in this next season? And plant that seed, press it into the soil, add a little water, and put that cup where you'll see it. Maybe it's on a kitchen windowsill, maybe it's in a bathroom window, maybe it's on a desk at work, maybe it's on the dashboard of the car. Let that cup become a sermon that never stops preaching to you, that God works where I can't see. Some of you are carrying some really hard things. Write that word you've been avoiding. Plant it. Hand it to the one who brings life out of those buried places. Some of you feel stuck spiritually. Write scripture or prayer or freedom or whatever it is. Let that become a new rhythm for you where every time you see that cup, you say a prayer or you have a verse or whatever it may be. Some of you have a name burning in your heart. This is what I have, and I'm going to do this afterwards for a name that is in my life that I want to pray for and see God do some things in. Write that name on there. Pray that name. Look for a moment to love on them well. And here's the thing. If you both get one in your house, it's not a race. You can celebrate whoever sprouts first. That'll be fun. But whether the actual seed or the prayer is praying sprouts first, it's not a competition. If you're child's cup molds or yours molds because you overwater it, that doesn't mean that God doesn't care about you. It just sometimes means that we need to remember that growth is hard and sometimes grace is patient. If it doesn't sprout the first time, plant it again. The point isn't perfect gardening, but the point is us trusting in God's ordained process. And when something small happens, celebrate it. When there's a softer tone in a hard conversation that usually ends up being hard, celebrate that moment. Where there's an apology that didn't exist the week before, but we had been longing for a really long time, celebrate that moment. When there's a nudge to give or to serve or forgive, that is one of those blade moments of it popping up through the ground. Tell someone about that. Share it with your small group. Snap a photo of the cup and text it to a friend saying, God's doing something that I've been waiting for. It's only just taken a little bit of time. So what if a whole church, as a whole church, we did this together for 1 week, whether we have cups or reminders or whatever it is, what if we did it for 1 month? What might grow in our homes? What might grow in our marriages? What might grow in our friendships, our classrooms, our break rooms, our workspaces, or even our neighborhoods? And as a kid said at the beginning of our time, I want us to say it together, so kids, we might need your help a little bit, okay? When we can't see it, God is working. Okay, we've got it now. I want you to all say it with me one more time, okay? When we can't see it, God is
working.
Awesome. Let me pray for us. And then after service, you can come up and grab a cup and some seeds if you would like. And I'll be up here if anybody wants to talk or pray about those things. So, God, thanks for this time where we could come together and have some fun reminiscing about elementary school and cups of dirt and seeds. And thank you for the beautiful joy that it is to have kids in service with us. Thank you for their hearts, their participation to teach us some things through the service this morning. And as we go from this place, would this be a day, or maybe as we start a new season, it's a moment in life for us to rely on your patience and your timing in the hard and the difficult things, to rely on your patience and the timing in the good and the beautiful things, and to rely on your patience and timing in the mundane, everyday aspects of life, because we know that you are a God who shows up and your timing is perfect. And would you help us rely on that this morning and forevermore? Amen.
For more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community, find us on the web at www.southharbor.org. Or find us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. And on Sunday mornings, you can find our service streamed live at 8:45 a.m. on Facebook and YouTube. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church and the Harbor Churches, we want to wish you a blessed week.